Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you very much for listening. I always appreciate it. Always appreciate it. And I really appreciate it when you give me referrals in the form of telling your friends and family about this program. Well, really about Relevant Radio in general. Thank you for that. Cyrus, you're looking hale and hearty.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. I've been breathing the helium, I guess, from the helium balloons. We got a show. 888-914-9149. Here's a mail, an email rather, that comes in from a mail. This is an email from a mail. No joking here. This is a serious email. Michael says, I'm writing to ask you, I'm rather heartsick as I write to ask you for your advice. I've been married over 30 years, and I love my wife. She's a good person, a mother and wife. I am a cradle Catholic, married in the church, and came back to my faith in real terms late in life. I've never been confused about abortion and have contributed and done the Walk for Life more than once in San Francisco. This evening, in a conversation about the gun control issue, it led to the subject of what else my wife disagrees with me on. To my shock and heartbreak, I learned that she thinks life does not begin at conception. It's not viable. This is my fault for not asking this decades ago, but I am still shocked and heartsick. We have three grown children, and I cannot fathom how any woman, much less my wife, could have children and hold these views. My question is how to move forward. I love her and would always be there with her in marriage. I have been praying for her conversion and my children for a long time. I know Christ hears my prayers and will answer them in his own way and time, possibly after my death. This revelation has gutted me, though. I will pray, of course, but can advise. I think he's saying, can you advise any ways to come at this when you're in disagreement with your spouse on this moral question? I can palpably imagine how shocking that would be for you. In a way, it's shocking for me, if you don't mind me saying so, Michael. It's shocking for me that it hasn't come up already. I mean, 30 years of marriage, I would think that this issue, which is such a hot button issue for so many people, they line up on both sides of the issue. The fact that it hasn't come up yet in any substantive way is surprising to me. I don't say that as a rebuke in any way. It's just surprising to me. Because I would think that that kind of a topic would have been at least discussed at some point. But in any case, since it hasn't been, you're left now in a situation where you've got to figure out how do you process your feelings about this. Now, you didn't go any further than that, so I don't know whether this is simply a matter of your wife is saying that she doesn't believe life begins at conception, therefore she's okay with abortion, maybe up to a certain point. That's possible. And I don't know, and I don't want to press too much on this issue, but it might be, and this, again, may be something for you to have another discussion with her about. It could be because of something in her own past related to this topic that could be the reason why she has the view that she has. I don't know, and it's not for me to know, but that might be another conversation to have with her just so you can plumb the depths of this issue and find out if there may be something more to it. That's all. That's all I'm asking or all I'm suggesting on that score. But in the meantime, you're asking what can you do? Well, I'm reminded of a similar but kind of reverse situation. Long ago, the mother of St. Augustine, St. Monica, I'm sure you've heard of her. She was a very saintly woman. She had a very tough row to hoe with her son Augustine because he was a wild man, morally speaking. And he, although was raised in the faith, he was never baptized as a child. And his mother, who was a very devout Catholic, she was heartbroken for all those years that he lived a wayward life. And you may say, yeah, but I'm not Augustine. No, you're not. But the scenario is that her own husband was a pagan. And she loved him and she stayed with him. And even though her husband, whose name, by the way, was Patrick, of all things, Patricius. And I need to go back and double check myself. Just there's that doubt in my mind. Is that right? I think that was his name. But in any case, he was a pagan. And St. Monica, who is, in my view, kind of analogous to your situation here, she was pained by the fact that he didn't share her views, her beliefs about Jesus, about the Mass, about the Eucharist, etc. But she stuck with him. She loved him. She was faithful and devoted to him, as she was to Augustine as her son. And in the end, in the very end, when he was dying, he converted. He was baptized, and he died. By all accounts, he died a holy death and went to heaven. And I do believe it was because of his wife's constancy, her long-suffering, indefatigable love for her husband that led her to just minister to him, so to speak, even though he disappointed her in many ways. And I can't imagine the kind of emotion she must have been dealing with, but she did it. So I propose her scenario to you, Michael, as a model for how you might proceed in this area. So if you and your wife are at odds on something that is such a deep and important issue, well, okay, there's always hope for conversion. There's always hope for coming to the truth. What did Jesus say? You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So it seems to me that you're in a very good position to do what we all talk about, in theory at least, and that is how husbands are intended to get their wives to heaven. Wives are intended to get their husbands to heaven. That's the nature of Christian marriage, is that you are now the most important person in that other person's life, especially insofar as you are now given the role by God to help the other person get to heaven. And that's what you spend the rest of your marriage doing. So you are in a certain enviable position. I realize that it's difficult and painful, but at the same time, it's also enviable insofar as you have a mission field on your doorstep, in your home, and that is your lovely wife. I'm sure she's wonderful in countless ways, no doubt about it. You wouldn't have been married to her for so long if she wasn't. So I would say just accept this challenge, accept this reality, calmly and lovingly and patiently, and ask the Lord to give you the graces that you'll need, the opportunities that will arise to say the right thing, to offer encouragement, information, whatever it may be, and then just make that the rest of your life's project. Not that your life's project has to be, I'm going to convert her to being pro-life. I don't mean it in that sense necessarily, although I do believe that eventually that will become part of how things turn out, God willing, but just make that your project. I love her. I don't understand her on this point. Doesn't make sense to me. I can't imagine how she would hold this view, but we're in it to win it, and I'm in this for the long haul, and I'm here to get her to heaven, and she's here to get me to heaven. Maybe this is part of how God wants me to get ready for heaven, by being patient and long-suffering if necessary, and gracious and supportive and all those things. So as I read and reread your letter, Michael, those were the thoughts that came to my mind. So I offer you that in a heartfelt way, and I hope that there is some happy conclusion, and hopefully sooner rather than later. That's always great when the Lord moves quickly. Sometimes he doesn't move quickly. Sometimes it seems like he doesn't move at all. And then whammo, look, things change. So those are my thoughts. I appreciate that very much. 888-914-9149. You can call now. We've got some lines open now, so don't be shy. 888-914-9149. Here's one that comes in from Beth. She says, Patrick, I wondered if you could warn your viewers. We have just discovered for the third time one of our teens being given an old phone by a friend at school, which they have been sneaking social media on after we all go to bed. The only remedy for this that we have found is to change the password for our Wi-Fi and to regularly check which devices are hooked up. We continue to pray for our children and do our best to be diligent in protecting their innocence, but they are darn sneaky. All right. Well, you didn't say how old the teenager is, and I don't know if this is like a 13-year-old or a 19-year-old. There would be a big difference, obviously. But the problem remains that if he or she is sneaking around behind the scenes, that in itself is a serious issue. Because you can ask yourself, well, what other things might this teenage daughter or son of mine be sneaking around and doing behind our back? So just be aware that although you're right that the Wi-Fi, it does give you a certain measure of control, and you can see who's logged on to it. The Eero mesh Wi-Fi system is one that I'm very familiar with. And one of the reasons that I decided to invest in that for our home is because I can see who's logged on, you know, what devices are logged on to this, and I can shut devices out if I want to. I've never really had to do that, but I mean, the capability is there. So I'm not a factory rep for Wi-Fis, but I have that experience. But here's the thing I'm aiming at here, and that is, even though you can control the Wi-Fi and turn it off or change the password, if that phone is cellular enabled, then your teenager doesn't need the Wi-Fi. So your teenager can be using the cellular plan. Now, who's paying for that plan? Is it the friend? That's a question. You know, who's paying for this plan? So if it doesn't have cellular, then you're right. Your Wi-Fi restrictions could, you know, help to curtail this. But if it does have cellular, then you're working with the Wi-Fi. Is not really going to matter one way or the other. So how do you deal with it? My advice would be what I would do, and that is I would confront it. I'd get it out in the open. I'd say, guess what? We're going to sit down and have a conversation. And here's what we know. We know that you're sneaking around behind our back. We know who gave you this phone, or at least we know that one of your friends gave you this phone. And we want to know who that friend is, by the way. And you get all the information out there, and you confront it in a loving but firm way. And then you explain what the repercussions are going to be. Oh, you were planning to get your driver's license, weren't you? Well, that's not happening. You're not going to get your driver's license, or you're not going to get your permit until and unless we discover with proof that you have stopped doing this. And here are the ways that we're going to know whether or not you've stopped doing this, whether or not you're sneaking around and so on. So that's one way that you could do this. If this is a chronic problem, you could install a security camera in your child's room and just say, hey, we're going to leave this on when we go to bed at night. This is going to, yeah, hang on, Cyrus. We're going to leave this on. Is that what you want? No, I don't want that. Okay, fine. Well, show us that we can trust you. And that could be a real incentive. And maybe you'd never even have to do that. But just to let them know, if you continue sneaking around, these are some of the things that might happen. So I would begin by saying, if there's something that you're planning to do, some special event, a driver's license or something, that is dependent upon you showing us that we can trust you. And I have found in my experience that that can be a very effective way of doing it. You don't want it to escalate, obviously, where it becomes more and more serious. It's serious enough, if you ask me, but you don't want it to escalate. So try that. That would be my advice. Give that a try. See what happens. Maybe you can talk some sense into your teenager, and he or she will say, yeah, I don't want to live that way. I really don't want to live that way. I want to live in the truth. I want to live in the light. I want to live with where my parents trust me. And that's an important reminder for teenagers. And just say, you know, we'd love to give you all kinds of privileges. There are all sorts of things we'd love to have you do. We would love to have a second driver or third driver in the house. It would be helpful to us. But, you know, if you are going to do this, then those kinds of privileges go away.
Do you remember the days when you could send your kids to their room and that was the punishment? It's like, go to your room.
Do I ever?
Those days are gone.
Let me share a secret with you, Cyrus. Let me share a secret with you. I am a reading rabbit. I love to read. I've always loved to read. And for me, reading is like, you know, it's way up there with the fun things that I like to do. So in my case, when I was grounded, I always preferred being grounded to any other punishment, because what that meant was I would go to my room and read, and I would be unbothered by anybody else. Yep. And I could just read to my heart's content. And I don't think my parents ever really figured that out.
Oh, they're smarter than you think. They knew.
Well,
exactly
later in life, they
on.
Got a big laugh when I told them. I said, you know, Dad, you remember all those times you'd send me to my room? He said, yeah. I said, well, I actually kind of liked it because I read a lot of books. And so they got a laugh out of it. No, my parents are smart. There's no doubt about that. And I got away with more things than they ever knew about.
Now, my kids are like, oh, you want me to go to my room where I have my phone and all my devices and the computer? And okay.
I have a solution.
I was
to
going
that.
There anyway.
I have a solution to that. You say to them, oh, yeah, you're going to a room, but you're not going to your room. You're going to the other room that we have set up that's got nothing in it. There's no TV. There's a cot.
Diabolical.
Yeah, there's a cot, you know, and maybe a plastic bottle of water if you get thirsty. No, I'm not suggesting that you imprison them, but, you know, obviously if they go to their room and they've got all their gadgets, it is kind of like me when I was reading.
We have a no cell phone in your bedroom rule, especially at night. Mm-hmm. And so it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I heard my son. I woke up because I heard him laughing. I'm like, what? And I didn't want to get out of bed. So I rolled over, I grabbed my phone, I just opened up the app that shows our Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And I turned
He's
it off.
He's on it.
Oh, yeah, he was
oh,
on
you
it.
Just shut the
and
Wi-Fi
I shut
down.
The Wi-Fi off, and then you just hear silence. And then I figured out there's a way where I can just turn the Wi-Fi off every night. So yeah. I don't know if that's the right approach. I mean, I probably should have punished the kid. But now I just
Let's
turn
do a whole hour talking about how
Well, it's interesting. I bet there's a lot of people. A lot of people that have kids and cell phones, and it's out of control. The toothpaste has been is out, and it's
You hard. Are correct, sir.
Yep. So.
Well, good on that. I hope that's helpful to you. A parent who sent me that, and this is an endless battle. And you have to fight that battle. Don't give in. Don't just go along to get along, because if that is permitted, then other things will happen. And obviously, you want to keep your kids safe. So love them, but tie these privileges to good behavior. And I have found, at least in my experience, that really works. I think I told a story before, Cyrus. I'll be brief. I know we have a break coming. That long about the time it was my time to get my driver's license, and I asked my dad, can I go get my driver's license? I guess at the time I was maybe 15, so I was getting into the permit phase, driver's permit. And my dad, knowing that I was a complete slack off when it came to math and science, I didn't apply myself, and I wish I had, looking back on it. And I would get C's and D's routinely in math and science because I didn't understand. I didn't really like it. And it didn't come easy to me at all. The things that came easily to me, I excelled in. And I would get A's in foreign languages and history and things like that. But I just didn't like math and science. So I was lazy and I just sort of slummed along getting C's and D's. So my dad said, you want your driver's license? Yeah. He said, okay, get an A in chemistry. What? I mean, that would be like saying fly across the Atlantic by flapping your arms. I said, oh, Dad. He said, yeah. He says, get an A in chemistry and you can get your driver's license at the end of next semester. He said, not a B+, not an A-. You have to get a solid A or you don't get your driver's license. And you know what happened?
No way.
I got an A in chemistry.
I want to see the paperwork proof of this.
This is the honest truth. So it was like the irresistible force meets the immovable object. And I wanted more intensely. I wanted to get my driver's license. I wanted to get out on the open road. I wanted to be street legal because all my friends were getting their driver's licenses. And I didn't want to be that guy who didn't have his driver's license. So I wanted that more than I didn't want to study math and science. So I buckled down. I don't know how I did it, but I did it. I buckled down. I learned and I got A's on my tests in chemistry and I got an A in that semester. And I brought the report card home to my dad and I said, hey, look, I got an A. He said, okay, go get your driver's license. And I did. I think the same day I went and got my driver's license.
That's cool, but I don't know if that would work today because kids are so pampered. They're like, I don't really care about getting a license. I don't have to pay for gas. I don't have to pay for insurance. I don't have to pay for the car. And mom and dad drive me around wherever I want to go.
I think it was a simpler time.
Yeah, it was.
We can blame it on that.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, if you're wondering, my final semester, I dropped back down to a D in whatever my science class was.
You're too busy cruising.
I was. Oh, and I got my very first ticket. About 2 weeks later, a buddy of mine who was, talk about a pampered kid, his parents gave him everything. Sometime I'll tell you a story about that. But they bought him a VW Bug when he turned 16. So he was pampered. So he had everything he wanted, and I had nothing. So when I asked him, "Hey, can I drive your car?" He's like, "Yeah, sure. Whatever. You know, I'll get a new car if you crash this one. No problem. My parents will buy me a new one." So I'm in this VW Bug. My hair is blowing. I had long hair in those days. My hair is blowing in the wind. Elbow out the left window. I'm right at, if you know Southern California, right as the 5 and the 405 freeways split, just north of what is now Lake Forest. It used to be called El Toro. I'm just cruising with not a care in the world. I'm blasting Boston More Than a Feeling, feeling so great. And I look up and I see the flashing red lights of doom because a highway patrol officer zapped me. These are the days when it was a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. And he zapped me going something like 70 or whatever. So I came crashing back down to earth very quickly. But yeah, I did get a D the following semester. You know, I'll never tire of hearing this song, even though it was the song that was playing when I got my first ticket. I'll be right back right after this.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
By the way, this is the last week that you can get Father Rocky's new free book called The Memorare Moment. As you know, our world needs a lot of help right now and a lot of prayer and intercession, which Our Lady is really good at doing. So we invite you to join us today at relevantradio.com/moment, M-O-M-E-N-T, and get your free book. And you can learn more about the prayer and all sorts of fascinating details surrounding it. Listeners and readers Mark and Terry Kohler in Minnesota wrote to us about the Memorare Moment, saying, "Woven remarkably with easy-to-read anecdotes of Father Rocky's delightful Catholic upbringing, the book helped us understand the power of saying the Memorare in these challenging times. It is a simple prayer with great power. May this book bring people closer to our mother and the power that she can have when we turn to her on a regular basis." So I don't know what your family situation is like. My family can use a lot of prayers. I think every family can use a lot of prayers. There's always something, right? Health, finances, family, children, you name it. I mean, Russia, Ukraine, it's a long list. So learn how not only to pray the Memorare, but also lots of fascinating details around that prayer. So again, if you want to get your free copy of this book, absolutely free. No salesman will call, no shipping, no handling. It's free, and by free, we mean absolutely free. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/moment, and tell us where to send it. And we'll send it. So, Cyrus.
Yes, sir.
I want to tell you the rest of the story.
Yeah, so you're driving along, windows down, hair's flying, you're listening to Boston, and then all of a sudden there's some cherries flashing in your rearview mirror.
I'm 60. So for those who didn't hear that part of the story, so I'm 16 years old. I had to suffer through getting an A in chemistry, which was the price that my father said I had to pay in order to get my driver's license. So I did it. I didn't like it, but I did it. So yeah, that's me. The completely, what is the right word for it? Completely carefree and careless Patrick Madrid. Elbow out the window. So the flashing red lights of doom go on. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I was blasting this song. Nancy and I drove by the 5405 split, in Orange County. And I pointed out to her, I said, and this is probably, I pointed this out to her like for the 100th time. Honey, that's the spot where I got my first ticket. She just rolled her eyes.
Yeah, I've heard this before.
Yeah. Oh, she's heard it many times before. So she didn't even answer. She just rolled her eyes. So here's the rest of the story. It just dawned on me over during the break. And we're going to come to the phone calls. Thank you for your patience, those of you, who are holding. But I would be remiss if I didn't tell the rest of the story. So what happened was, so I get zapped by the highway patrolman. And his last words to me after he hands me this ticket was, have a nice day. And he gets back in his car. And I'm like Don Knotts on 10 cups of coffee. My hands are shaking. I'm scared of what my parents are going to do to me. So, you know, so here's what happened. I had a little band I was playing in, a little rock and roll band. And there was a party that was planned for that, what would it have been? I think Friday night? Yeah, I think so. At the house of the friend whose car I was driving. Remember, he's the pampered kid. He's the one whose parents gave him everything. And here's how bad it was. There's an area right near our high school that has some lakes, you know, like really nice high-end houses built on a lake with a little dock and that kind of thing. This is in the area called Lake Forest. It used to be called El Toro. And so his parents were going away for like 3 or 4 days, and he said, I'd like to have a party. And they said, sure. And they bought beer. They gave him like $100, which in those days was like $1 billion, $100 to buy pizza. They stocked the place with potato chips and pretzels and Coke and beer. I'm serious. And they said, have your party, but no one drives. If you want people to sleep over, that's fine. And of course, there were going to be girls at this party. So there I am with a ticket in my hand that I know that I've got to show to my parents because I'm only 16 years old. I don't think I could have afforded the fine, so I didn't know what was going to happen. But that ticket happened on a Thursday. The following day was this party, so I just didn't tell my parents about the ticket. And I went to the party, and I was allowed to sleep over. And by the way, I want to say, full disclosure, no girls stayed over, so please don't get the wrong idea. I don't want to suggest anything that didn't happen. But so I stayed the night. We had a ball, my little rock and roll band. We played some music, which was fun, and then goofed off and went swimming and whatnot the following day. And then like that afternoon, I came home. We go to Mass on Sunday. After Mass on Sunday, we're sitting around in the living room, and I realized I've got to tell my parents about this ticket. So I sheepishly take the ticket out of my pocket and I hand it to my dad and I say, Dad, I'm really sorry, but I got a ticket. So here's how my dad and my mom worked. My dad was like instantly angry, but it blew over very quickly. So he sort of flared up. Oh, this is ridiculous. Why did you do this? Why are you so irresponsible? I'm sorry, Dad. I'm sorry. He says, well, you're going to have to work, you know, to pay for this fine, and we're going to have to take you to the court and all that. I said, yeah, I'm really sorry. So it would have been over. That would have been the end of it. But my mom takes the ticket and she's looking at it very closely. She's scrutinizing this traffic ticket and she zeroes in on the date that I received the traffic ticket.
You're in it now.
Yeah. So she says, wait a minute. You got this ticket like 3-4 days ago. How come you didn't tell us when you got the ticket? And I said, you know, I did not know what to say. So she obviously zapped me because she said, oh, not only did you get a ticket, but you didn't tell us about it because you wanted to go to this party and you knew that we would have grounded you. You couldn't go to the party, but you went anyway. And so that made it doubly worse. So that's the rest of the story. So I learned two lessons. Number one, don't speed. Number two, if you mess up, get it out in the open, you know, get it out in the open quickly, especially if it involves your parents grounding you, get it out in the open and then it's done. So that's my lesson. That was the rest of the story.
It's nice to hear that you screwed up
Oh, gosh. That's why I read so many books, because I was grounded so often.
Right.
Had it not been for that, I probably would
you
have
wouldn't
been
be here right
way
now.
More ignorant than I am.
That's wow.
Okay, that's, now that I've got that, all of that out, I feel better.
Did when your kids, you know, screwed up, did you think back on the, on those old stories and how you would, you know, handle yeah. whatever was going on with your own kids?
Yeah, I would. I actually, I never really thought of it that way, but I think I think seeing them do those things or whatever other things they did, and then my now being in the dad role, before I was always in the role of the, you know, the guilty, you know, the guilty offender being punished. Now I'm in the role of the father who has to punish the guilty offender. Now I'm a grandfather seeing my children now punishing the guilty offenders. So it was interesting. And as I look back on it, I'm glad that my, you know, one thing that really sticks out too is that, yeah, I did get grounded a lot, but my dad, especially my mom too, but more so my dad, he taught me another lesson now that I think about it, and that was about forgiveness. There were many times when I merited some punishment, and there were many times when my dad said, you know what, I'm going to give you a second chance. You shouldn't have done this, and I'm unhappy that you did it, but I'm going to give you a second chance. I'm not going to punish you. Sometimes he did punish me, sometimes he didn't. And that too is one of those lessons that I learned about how God forgives us and how God, being a loving father, doesn't want to punish you. He doesn't want to zap you or ground you. He wants you to be responsible and mature and enjoy all the privileges appertaining thereunto. But when you don't cooperate, sometimes punishment is necessary, but God is a forgiving God. And so my father, in a very important way, sort of modeled that for me. And I hope that it helped me when it came time for me to be a father. So there's my answer.
That's great. Yeah, thanks. That's really good. I tell my kids, you know, you can do whatever you want, but you don't get to pick the consequences.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, boy, is that true. People should wear that. People should have a sign everywhere about that. All right, 888-914-9149. Why don't we go to Joe in New Jersey? Good morning, Joe. Welcome. You're first up today.
Yes. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
I'm sorry. Sola Scriptura, you had a debate against Mr. White. What's the best video I can watch? Because I want to share it with a Protestant friend of my daughter's.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that it's available on YouTube, but I don't know if it's complete. I don't know if it's the complete debate or if anything has been excised. Here's you can search for it. You might find it there. It is also available as a digital download. You can find it on my website as well. But here's the thing. There was another debate that I did, not with him. I did another debate with him on Mary and the Communion of Saints. That was in 2002. But I did another debate. And it was arranged by a Protestant organization, and they asked me to do the debate, so I did it. And before the debate, the rules of the engagement were that they would provide me with an unedited master copy or, you know, duplicate master copy of the audio and the video. Well, when the debate was over, one of the tech guys probably didn't get the memo. He handed me the unedited duplicate masters of the cassette tapes, but he said we have to duplicate the VCR, because then it was on VCR tape, VHS tape. He says, we'll duplicate these, and we don't have time to do it now because we're packing everything up. We'll send it to you in the mail. I said, okay, fine, here's my address. A week goes by, I don't get them. So I call the organization. I say, I'm waiting to get the duplicate masters of the debate. They refused to send them to me. And they were actually angry that I got the unedited masters of the audio. And the reason here's what I found out, Joe, is that they would not release it. They wouldn't release the full debate. You know what they did? They chopped it up and they released kind of like a highlight reel, like maybe out of the 6 hours of debate or whatever it was, 5 hours of debate. They released like a 1 hour highlight reel that was heavily edited to make them look good. And
wow.
Yeah. So for that reason, it just make sure it's the entire debate. And if you have that, then you, by all means, show it to your friend. And that's one of my, is probably my most favorite debate of all. It's, It's the one that I've heard the
most. Sola Scriptura is the one I'm looking for.
Yeah, it's called, the actual title of the debate is, Does the Bible Teach Sola Scriptura?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I believe it's floating around out there, so by all means, share it with your Protestant friend. All I wanted to say, Joe, was that over the years, I've had countless former Protestants tell me that it was listening to that debate that helped them become Catholic. So I think there's some value there.
Amen. That's good stuff.
All right, sir. Oh, by the way, I wrote a follow-up article. If you're interested, Joe, here's how you get it. Go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and underneath where it says The Patrick Madrid Show, you'll see where it says links. Click links. And then under articles, the article that you want to get is called The White Man's Burden. And it's just a play on words. It has nothing to do with race. But get The White Man's Burden. And that's kind of a follow-up article I did looking back on the debate and kind of commenting on it after the fact. You might find that interesting.
How do you spell that, White Man's Burden? White's Man, W-H?
No, The White, W-H-I-T-E, Man's, M-A-N-S, well, M-A-N apostrophe S, Burden. But you'll see it right there. Just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, click on links, click on articles, and you'll see it. It's right around in the middle somewhere. And just click that. It's a PDF, and it's all yours. All the articles there are free. They're all available to you. So I think you'll find that helpful. Anyway, I've got to move on, but thanks, Joe. I appreciate it, and I hope you and your friend find that debate helpful. I'll take a break, but I'll be back with more of your phone calls. My number is 888-914-9149. I love this, Cyrus. All Boston, all the time. I can handle that. Oh, by the way, I have a perfect driving record, more or less, since I got that ticket. I learned a lesson.
Wink, wink.
I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
I just thought of something, Cyrus. If they ever do a Patrick Madrid reality tour in Southern California, you could be the bus driver.
And this is where Patrick got pulled over on the 405.
So you'll have to roll the windows down and blast that song.
Here's the house where Patrick
got
had
grounded.
A ticket in his back pocket, but he still went to the party.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
Well, you know.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
That's your show. It's a Patrick Madrid show.
That's
go ahead.
That's true. I was just going to mention, because I want to get to some more phone calls here. We're a little light on phone calls this morning. That's okay. But I mentioned in passing as we went out for the last break that I had a perfect driving record. What I mean by that is I have a near perfect driving record. No tickets of any kind for about 35 years.
That's pretty good.
I would say so. And only a few tickets before that, including the one I just mentioned.
Have I ever told you the first time I got pulled over and got a ticket?
No, I don't think
I was 17 years old, and I was flying down some back road, and all of a sudden there's lights behind me. So I pull over, and I was driving a Chevy Citation. It was just a beater car. It was held together with duct tape. And the cop rolls up, and I have my hands at 10 and 2, and I'm super polite, and I roll down the window, And after a couple seconds, he's like, "So he's writing stuff down," and he's like, "So son, is this a citation?" And I'm like, "Yes, officer, it sure is." And he goes, "Rip!" And he said, "Here's another one."
Oh, I bet he was laughing all the way home.
I bet he still laughs about that. Yeah. And it's like you can either like make that joke and not give me the ticket, or not make the joke and give me the ticket. But you can't have it. Can't get both, and he took both.
Well, it's only funny if he did both. It's not even a joke if he didn't do both.
Well, the joke was on me.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, I had What, as long as we're at,
did you
on
ever
the topic.
Get any? So okay, Mr. Perfect driving record here. You did. I've been pulled over a couple times. I've gotten warnings now. And mm-hmm. how about you? Have you? You've at least been pulled over.
I have gotten a couple warnings. Yeah, I have. And the one that sticks out in my mind the most was it was at night and I was turning to get on the freeway. It was you know, like you're on a main street and then there's a left-hand turn that would put you on the on-ramp for the freeway. And as I recall, the turn arrows were not really very prevalent in those days. And I wasn't used to that. I didn't even really notice that this turn lane had an arrow. So even though the light turned green for the traffic to go forward, my lane still had a red arrow, but I didn't notice that because I just saw the light go green. So I turned, and I turned against a red arrow, which I shouldn't have done. But it was an honest mistake. So I get up on the freeway, and instantly I get zapped by the highway patrol. So he comes up. But what I did saved me from getting a ticket. In fact, he even told me, he says, what you did saved you from getting a ticket. So I just got a warning. But what I did was, because it was nighttime, as soon as I pulled over, I turned on the dome light. I put my hands up on the steering wheel where they're clearly visible. I think I had rolled the window down just to have it already down. So he comes up to the car and says, license and registration, please. I said, sure, my wallet's in my back pocket. Is it okay with you if I reach back there to get it? He said, go for it. Take the wallet out, take the registration out, hand them to him. He looks at them, you know, with the flashlight and all that. And then he hands them back to me. And he says, I'm not going to give you a ticket. He says, I normally would, but I'm not going to give you a ticket because you were very polite and because you had turned the light on and you had your hands out where I could see them. He says, I really appreciate that because as a police officer or as a highway patrol officer, you know, you never know who, it might be Charles Manson that you just pulled over and you went out of your way to make my life easier. So I'm going to make your life easier. No ticket.
That's smart. I've always done get the window rolled down and I have my hands at 10 and 2. But turning on the dome light, that's really smart.
Well, it helped me, and I've done it. I mean, I've only been pulled over a few times, so it's not like it's something that I've had to do often, but I'm a big believer in being courteous, and definitely, I mean, if there's somebody with a loaded gun standing a few feet away from you, don't you want that person to be as calm and comfortable as possible? I do.
Absolutely.
So word to the wise. Let's see. Let's go to Michael in Baltimore. Good morning, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hello, good morning.
Yes.
I didn't realize I'd be on so soon.
Well, here we are.
Can you hear me? Okay, great. I have a minor little thing. Actually, it's kind of two, but if we only have time for one, I'll say the first one. When I converted to Catholicism, I was living in D.C., and one of the great things about that is they have confession at the cathedral, I mean, at the basilica all the time. So I don't wait until Saturday. I know I need to go, I go. And I rarely have ever gotten a ticket, but we have speed cameras in D.C. Yeah. And it's really funny, when I got my first and only one, I looked at the date and the time, and I realized, oh, I was going to confession, which I did not confess because I did not know yet. But I mentioned this on NPR because they were having a discussion about speed cameras and if they're effective or not. And it was just really neat that I got to mention that people actually go to confession on NPR. And it wasn't a discussion about Catholicism, but it's just a way to bring it up without actually going into it. You know, like there are probably other people listening that's like, you know, I haven't been in a while or something. It's like any little interesting thing. I just thought it was really cool that I got to mention confession on NPR.
Yeah.
Not that your show isn't wonderful, but, you know, it's slightly different.
Well, now that you know about the Patrick Madrid show, I'm assuming that you never listen to any other program ever, right? It's just this one and Relevant Radio.
No, because you're not always on. There is not a 24-hour Patrick Madrid show. I wish there was.
But me too. Well, actually, no, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But we have 24/7 programming for you on Relevant Radio. But in any case, you said you had a second question or a second comment?
This isn't really a question, but it's actually what you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. This is something I learned about police. I also had long hair, was in bands and everything when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I was stuck. I was a DJ as well. And I had all this equipment in my car. I got lost on the way back home. I was about 2 hours away from my home. And I went up a one-way street. And it was dark. I had tons of equipment. I had long hair. The cop that pulled me over
he was all business. He's, you know, just let me see this, let me see that. Right. Looked in the car, asked me music questions, make sure I was really a DJ. So I was.
He asked you music questions? Really?
Yeah, he wanted to make sure I was really a DJ. Yeah.
Okay.
So probably shouldn't have, because I have way too much info about music. But anyway, so he didn't give me a ticket. He just said, okay, well, you know where you're going. You know how to get back to the highway. Yes, sir. But I stopped to get a Mountain Dew because I needed some caffeine. And as I'm paying for it, I hear, let me get that. And there was this cop, same guy, but he had a smile on his face. He's like, you sure you know where you're going now? It's like, I learned that, you know, when they pull you over, they got to be all business. They don't know who you are. And I learned that, and I've always kept that with me. And this was in the 80s when this happened. And I've always kept that with me, that they have to put on that kind of act to make sure they're the alpha so that they can kind of control the situation. But then he bought me a soda, you know? So it's like you learn that they had this thing going on that they have to control. And I always carry that with me, and I've always been really polite and nice to police officers. So I just thought that was a great learning experience for me.
That's a good one. When you write your memoirs, Michael, you ought to include a chapter on that one. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I concur with you. I mean, it really does go a long way if you show courtesy. I mean, obviously, police officers, there's a benefit to you that you might not get a ticket or may not get as much of a ticket. But in life, what's that old saying? That the people that you meet, you know, be careful how you treat people on the way up, because they're the same people you'll meet on the way down. And one of the things that I've learned in life, and by the way, Michael, thank you. I appreciate it very much. One of the things I've learned in life, well, I've learned a couple of things. Well, I've learned a lot of things, but a couple of the things I've learned in life, one is, if you want to see what someone is really like, if you want to see someone's character, so ladies, if you're out on a date, single ladies, of course, but if you're out on a date, observe how the man you're out on a date with treats the waitstaff. Just watch to see, is he polite? Is he courteous? Is he patient? Or is he impatient? Is he difficult to deal with? Now, he may be doing his very best to impress you, but if he is rude or disrespectful to other people, just take note of that, because he's putting his best foot forward with you. But what you're catching a glimpse of is the real person. That's something to keep a close eye on. I'm not saying that you have to be like an investigative reporter or anything, but just be aware of it. And just in general, not even in a dating context, just be aware and observe how people treat other people, especially how do they treat people who are in like a subservient position. Could be a waiter, could be a flight attendant, could be a busboy, could be the person who's taking the order at a fast food drive-thru. And you can learn a lot about someone's real character by how they treat other people. And then a second thing I learned, it's kind of unrelated, but in a way it is kind of related. If you want to know who your real friends are, not just people that you're friendly with, because you can be friendly with a lot of people, take note of to what extent do they feed the friendship. Does this person ask you anything about you? Does this person ask you anything about your situation, your struggles? You know, how's it going? Tell me what's going on with you. Do they listen? Do they want to hear from you? And do they listen to you? Or is it all about them? That's another really, and I didn't know this for the longest time. Eventually, it sort of dawned on me. That's how you will, at least in one sense, be able to determine to what extent is this an actual friendship. Because if it's a one-way street, even if it's fun, and even if you like the other person and you're friendly, etc., that's not a real friendship. If all the other person wants to talk about is himself or herself, and there's never any interest in you and your family and your situation, that's usually a sign that this is not a real friendship. That's been my experience. Cyrus, you probably have noticed that too. It's one reason why I ask you about yourself all the time.
And I love telling you about myself.
Especially on the air, right?
That's right. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Nope,
you're absolutely right. A lot of people don't know, so I'll tell them that when you were assigned to this program, because we had a producer change years ago, and our producer, actually, she was moving she thought she was going to go into religious life. So one thing led to another. She's not going to be with us. So you wound up being her replacement. And the very first day that we worked together on this program, I'll never forget it.
Yeah, well, I made it abundantly clear.
Oh, yeah. Well, what you said was, I'll get music, I'll do all the other fun stuff, but just I have stage fright. I don't want to talk to anybody, and I definitely don't want to be on the air ever, so please just leave me out of it.
I'm painfully introverted. Yeah. And you pull me out of my shell.
Within minutes, I had you on the air. I dragged you out into the limelight.
I believe you asked me something, and then there's a good 5 seconds of silence, and then I finally talked.
Like you're thinking, I told you.
I told this guy. This is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, it's been a wonderful 5-year nightmare, hasn't it?
Yeah, this is it has been wonderful. Hey, yeah. You know, we only have a minute left. I have another pulled over story, and this one involves our own Josh Raymond of the Inner Life. So I had just
I'm all ears.
Yeah, this is
Josh is like he's like a layman's version of St. Padre Pio. He's a virtuous man, patient, and I can't imagine him having a traffic incident.
They terrify me with April Fool's Day. I mean, I have like PTSD. But on April, we had just moved to a brand new house like the week before, and I'm pulling out to work. I'm doing morning air, so I'm coming out. I'm leaving to go to work at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and there's a for sale sign in my yard. He put a for sale sign in my yard, and so I drove immediately to his house at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was going to put this in his yard, and I got pulled over.
Did you get a ticket?
No, because I told him what Josh had done, and he laughed and thought it's funny. He looked at the sign in the back of my car.
That is funny.
Yep.
Wow.
April Fool's.
I'll be right back.